Stay tuned. Nature News is coming up next, right here on WTZQ.
Join us now for an informative look at the world of nature with local naturalist and educators Carlton Burke and Dan Lazar, reporting on all the natural events occurring right here in wild western North Carolina. From bugs to bears and everything in between, get ready to explore the rich natural heritage of our southern Appalachian Mountains.
Well, hello and welcome to another broadcast of Nature News, a program that keeps you in touch and informed with what is happening in the world of the wilds of western North Carolina and the surrounding southern Appalachian region. My name is Carlton Burke. I'm one of your host educators here today at Nature News.
And my name is Dan Lazar. I'm your other host educator.
And Dan, we are not in our studio today, are we?
Nope, we're not far from it.
Many times we leave the studio and go outside and do a program. We're not even outside, are we?
Well, no, we plan to do this recording at the pond out at the Arboretum.
At the North Carolina Arboretum, we're going to be at their pond.
Right.
And why we're not at their pond recording this?
Well, it was too windy and the microphone was picking up.
Oh, that's right. It's windy outside and our microphone is so sensitive. So
with this high-tech equipment that we have.
Yeah.
So we moved over to behind the dumpster.
Yeah, we went over by the building where there's a spot over there, but it was still too windy. Too windy and it was too cool there. Because the wind was making it kind of cold. So we said, well, maybe we'll go inside and find a little spot. Yeah. But what happened when we did that?
Well, we opened the door and the wind blew these giant paper flowers down and made a mess in their lobby. And plus it was too noisy in there.
Yeah, it was too noisy in the lobby and it was echoey. So, there's a bluebird sitting on a bluebird box.
Oh, I see it, yeah.
So that gives you a hint of where we're at. We're back outside, but we're inside outside.
No,
what
we
mean by that is we are sitting
house.
Inside my pickup truck at the North Carolina Arboretum in a parking lot because it's too windy outside. You know, it's a beautiful afternoon. It's a little cool. And we're watching the trees around us here and the grass grow.
The
and
the
bluebird just landed on a bluebird box over there and flew off. But in any case, it's kind of quiet here. Our microphone will not be compromised, so we'll be doing Nature News inside my pickup truck.
It's kind of mobile recording here.
And this is not the first time we've done this.
Why don't we drive around and
what? Then we have engine noise.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Don't you remember? You remember one time
we did this before?
Yeah. Well, I know I've done a solo Nature News while I was driving my truck one time. I was stopping catching a couple of snakes on a highway as I was driving.
Okay.
That were out crossing. And then one time, Dan, remember once you were out in Oregon?
Yeah.
And I think you were sitting in, and we did a Zoom Nature News.
Oh, that's right.
And you were sitting in your car.
Yeah, that's true.
Out there.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in the studio.
So we broadcast from a lot of strange places.
And you know why we do that? Because we are strange individuals. But
now
thanks.
We're true professionals.
Yes. So whatever it takes to bring you Nature News. So this is our broadcast for the weekend of May the 2nd. And Dan, you know, people would always say, I can't believe it's May, or I can't believe it's June, or I can't believe, you know, that's kind of silly. It's kind of like people said all the kind of stuff all the time. But, you know, as much as I love the month of April.
Yeah.
April has been a long month, it seems like, just personally to me, and I don't know why, because usually the months that I enjoy the most seem to go the quickest, but for some reason, it just seems like it took a long time for May to get here, to me personally. Do you have that same feeling, or is it just me?
I think the months are going too fast, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it just seemed like April went by awfully slow compared to the fact that April seems like it normally goes by awfully fast to me, because April and May are two of my favorite months of the entire year.
Yeah, they are. And
love spring.
Sometimes if you are doing something totally new, time slows down.
Yeah.
Like if you're visiting somewhere, you're going on a trip somewhere, you know, the time doesn't go as fast. But if you're doing the things you always do, then the time can kind of slip by a little bit quicker. And I think it went slower for me because I just moved back into my house after the hurricane. And I've just really been enjoying it, and especially enjoying sitting on the deck at sunrise and sunset, because now it's totally different. It's like being on a vacation, because unfortunately, the forest pretty much blew down.
You live in the middle of a clear-cut forest now, Dan.
Now it's yeah, now, but now
I have... man didn't clear-cut it, nature did.
Nature did. But now I have these wonderful views in both directions for sunrise, sunset. And so I think that's kind of slowed things down for me. I'm really appreciating the sky, the stars at night, sunrise, the sunset, more visible animals. I can see deer, you know, walking by, bobcats, which we mentioned, black bears. And so I think because of that, these new sensations I'm getting, it seems like it's kind of slowed down the time.
Yeah. Well, speaking of animals, as we're sitting in a truck here, it's windy outside. I see a robin down there on the ground hunting worms. I see the bluebird we just saw, male bluebird. He's up on the sign sitting right there next to your car. It was over one parking space here. The male bluebird with his beautiful electric blue coat on and then his rustic... a reddish vest sewn underneath that, and I think he's sitting there looking around for any kind of insect he might catch to bring back to the bluebird box, which is over on the hillside not far away from us. Notice that the bluebird box here at the Arboretum, they've got a lot of them up, but that one has a stovepipe on the pipe.
Right.
I mean, on the pole.
On the pole.
And that's a predator guard to keep things like raccoons and snakes from climbing up there and getting inside the box. Yeah. And you just put up a bluebird box finally for the very first time at your house.
Right. And within 15 minutes of me putting it up, a male bluebird was sitting on the top of that box.
Wow, because you have a brand new habitat there.
Yeah, so now that we have opening in the forest, now this is the first, well, there were bluebirds last year because, you know, they didn't come till after Hurricane Helene had created a new habitat.
Right.
And so now I've got a woods edge, open field type of habitat and getting different species in there. One thing I've noticed is the moths. I don't have a lot of the same moths that I used to have. And my house in the forest, I had, you know, a lot of good, all kinds of moths, hawk moths, luna moths, cecropia moths, giant tulip tree silk moths, rosy maple moths, just beautiful moths coming in. And it's still a little early in the year, so I might still get some of these, but it's a totally different environment, and I'm not going to have the same moths that I used to have.
Yeah. Ooh, also I see a brown thrasher bird over there, I think, feeding on the ground in the grass over there.
Oh, yeah.
So, that brings to mind, Dan, when you're sitting inside of a vehicle or something like this, a vehicle sitting where there's wildlife nearby is an excellent blind, as long as you don't exit the vehicle and make a lot of movement.
That's true.
I actually carry my camera with me in my truck here, and it's always right by my side here, so there have been so many times when I have been driving around railroad, stopped to stop signs, and was able to whip up a camera, get a picture of a groundhog coming out of its burrow right on the side of the highway, or a rabbit in the grass, or any kind of number of things like that. You take the opportunity to get pictures and stuff whenever you can in a blind, because so many animals are used to seeing it going by all the time.
Right.
And it's usually when it stops and something exits the vehicle that they get frightened.
Right.
But the
bluebird just came and landed almost in front of the truck here.
Right, right.
And it looked like it was poking around trying to get a moth out from the lawn area.
Right, Well, anyways, it is May finally here. There is so much going on activity right now. There's just so much stuff you can't take the time to watch it all. Right now, as we approach this first week coming up in May, this is probably the peak of the migratory songbirds that are coming back, what we call the neotropical migratory songbirds coming back to our area. I'm sure the scarlet tanager is starting to arrive now.
Yep.
A lot of the different warbler species. I've heard a report. I was actually teaching a class here to Arboretum today about birds and their annual cycle here in West North Carolina, which you would expect to see. I had a couple of my participants in class that mentioned they have some rose-breasted grosbeaks at their bird feeders.
Those
beautiful males with their red and white breasts and black feathers, and the females that look like a big, giant, huge finch, which they are. They're actually in the finch family. But we see them as they migrate through for just a couple of days at a low elevation before they move up into higher elevations where they'll establish their nesting territory. So who knows? Right now, back at the Nature News studio or back at my home somewhere nearby there, they could be at the bird feeder right now. Here I am recording Nature News at Arboretum. I'm missing it all.
That's true. I remember when I used to have bird feeders, rose-breasted grosbeaks come in groups and have several of them on your bird feeder at the same time. Very beautiful bird. And I remember one time being down in, I think, Ecuador, somewhere, in the tropics, and seeing rose-breasted grosbeaks there, where they go to spend the winter. Yeah.
I mean, you
like a friend from back home.
Yeah, it's like I wouldn't it be funny like that. That is the same bird that was in my yard. The very exact same bird. It could be because they migrate back and forth. That's one of the amazing things. Of course, a lot of people have been reporting they've got their hummingbirds back.
Yeah,
I know at my house, and then again also at the Nature News Studio, I have some hummingbirds, but I'm not having large routine visits at the bird feeder like I normally would. So I'm starting to wonder, did some of my resident hummingbirds not make it through the migration and come back, or are they maybe just a little bit late coming back to my yard, or maybe only one or two has made it back that survived? But I'm a little. I hope I see some more hummingbird activity at my bird feeder. But in case hummingbirds are back, a lot of these other birds are back in the area. Everybody's building nests. Everybody's singing out there. Stamps their territory. I know I've heard calling some black and white warblers. I've heard a Perula warbler or Perula warbler, whatever you want to call it, a worm-eating warbler. We're just at the peak of bird activity right now. And have you seen a scarlet tanager yet, Dan?
Not yet.
Have you seen the indigo bunting yet? Have you seen any of them yet?
And I used to always see scarlet tanagers right around the first week of May. So
and probably in your yard.
In my yard.
Yeah, no trees for them laying in your yard.
Yeah, but they'd be up in an oak tree, and they would come just when the white oak leaves were just coming out. Mm-hmm. And so you get a good view of them before the leaves are all the way out. But now, most of those trees have blown down, so I don't know if I'm going to have scarlet tanagers anymore.
Yeah, well, they're somewhere nearby where there are trees.
That's right. Maybe just around the side of the mountain.
Yeah. By the way, Dan, we got a phone call from one of our listeners. He identifies himself as John from Flat Rock.
Okay.
And he called and left a message last week. And we actually talked about this a little bit, but we received his message after we already recorded our program for the week. But he wanted to mention that he thought he was seeing an unusually large number of tiger swallowtail butterflies and other species of butterflies here lately. So I thought it might be neat to discuss that, because I think we are having, so far, from my observation, I think we're having a much better butterfly year kickoff than we did last year, when it seemed like there was a dearth of butterflies the entire season. What do you think?
We've been having a lot of pearl crescents this year. I've noticed that. These are little small butterflies, maybe a wingspan of an inch and a half at the most. And they're basically a dark orange, rusty color with a lot of dark brown markings on them. They come out and they're multiple generations. The adults live a couple weeks. So noticing a lot of them and a lot of tiger swallowtails. Yeah. That's true. I've been noticing a lot of tiger swallowtails.
And you know, the one thing about the tiger swallowtails, and we mentioned this before, is the average person would just, this need is spring, we're seeing these tiger swallowtails and all. But there's a much deeper story to that, because the leaves are just now coming out on the trees. The tulip trees are just now getting leaves that are big enough to be considered almost or very close to fully leafed out. But it takes about 4 to 5 weeks, or sometimes up to 6 weeks, for a tiger swallowtail caterpillar to go from egg to chrysalis to adult butterfly, and those leaves have not been out that long yet, have they?
Right, they're just coming out.
So that can only mean one thing, that the tiger swallowtails, even that we're seeing now some 4 to 5 weeks after we saw the very first tiger swallowtails emerge back in March, they can only be attributed to the fact that these are some more chrysalises that overwintered in the pupal stage of chrysalises that did not emerge in March, mid to late March. You're emerging now in late April and first part of May here coming up. And so they are timed like that. They don't all come out at one time. We've mentioned the reason that makes sense is probably because there was a late spring freezing. You killed all your developing tiger swallowtails in the area. You would have no left over. So evidently nature staggers them. Some will come out a little bit later.
Right. Same thing with luna moths.
Right.
They have a long emergence period. They don't all come out at the same time. And there's an advantage, I guess, for the early ones to come out, but in a normal year. But then if you have a late freeze, then there's a disadvantage. And so, this early emergence is having a lot of survivals at some points. Their offspring are going to emerge, become adults, lay their eggs, and that will promote early emergence. And if we always had, if the temperature was warmer, then they would shift their emergence to an earlier period.
Right.
But then if you get these late frosts, then the ones that come out later are going to leave more offspring, and they're going to become the dominant part of the population. And so we're in a period now where it's kind of varying back and forth. And so we got, you know, staggered emergence of a lot of these insects.
Right. Also, speaking of insects, you know, since we've had some drought conditions here in West North Carolina around a lot of the region here, we haven't had as much rainfall as we normally have, but that means we've had a dry spring, and a dry spring is pretty advantageous for a lot of the insects out there, particularly caterpillars that hatch out because they suffer from fungal diseases and cold dampness that we would get when we have a lot of rains and cooler temperature in the springtime, like I believe was pretty much what we had last year. So that means probably good survival of some caterpillars and other small insects here in early spring for the songbirds to use to feed their developing young. So that's good. And I know John and Flat Rock was wondering why we had so many butterflies this spring, like the swallowtails. But since those are ones that overwintered, it only means that the last crop of swallowtails that went into brumation, I mean, not brumation, but into their chrysalises to basically, you know, stay dormant for the winter. There was a good crop of the last ones there. Maybe we had, I don't even remember, maybe we had a really late freeze last year that would have allowed more of the caterpillars to mature all the way and not, they didn't have to stop their feeding too soon and turn into a small chrysalis, you know, in a small emerging butterfly like we sometimes see in the spring. Because usually in the spring, if we see something like a tiger swallowtail emerging, it looks like it's smaller than normal. That means that it went into the chrysalis stage smaller than normal because it was in the caterpillar stage in less time than it needed to be, and it didn't grow big enough to get any bigger. So that results in a small butterfly. But I don't think I've seen any small miniature tiger swallowtail butterflies this spring like I did last year. So I think they all had a good season to complete their growth. Went into good healthy chrysalis for the winter and a good number of them, and that's probably why we're seeing so many more spread out in the springtime right now.
Yeah, and I think I can't think back as far as the winter, but late winter, early spring, it's been relatively mild, and so I think a lot of the chrysalises have survived over the winter and are ready to open up and the adult butterflies emerge. But yeah, we've had a good year in general. For different butterflies, we have some silver-spotted skippers out right now, and they're doing well. A lot of the little spring azures, they're doing well. I don't know if any more than normal, though. The only one I've really noticed that seems abundant is the pearl crescent, and they have multiple generations, so they're starting off really well. So yeah, I associate really tiger swallowtails with early spring. When I see those, you know, it highlights to me that spring is finally here.
That's right. A good symbol of spring.
Is that our state butterfly? It should be. We have a state butterfly. We must have a state butterfly.
Well, we'll have to check that out.
Maybe one of our listeners could tell us.
We should know that. Anyway, we should know that.
If I could vote, I would vote for the Tigers.
Well, look it up.
Yeah, okay.
Why don't you look it up I'm giving contact information.
Okay, you give that, I'll
look it up. We pause 2 or 3 times in our program to get our contact information because here at Nature News, we want to hear from you, whether it's to say, hey, I'm just listening to the program, or to let us know you have a topic you'd like to discuss, a question you might have about the world of nature, an observation you'd like to share with us, or for any reason to get in touch with us here at Nature News. So it's very easy to do. The way that most people get in touch is by our email address. So write this down. You never know when you might need it. Our email address is naturenewswnc@gmail.com. Again, that's naturenewswnc@gmail.com. But however, don't forget, you can also reach us by phone only by leaving a voicemail message, because we will not answer the phone, but we have a voice recorder that does. And if you need us to call you back, please mention that. Otherwise, we just use the information on the air when we get a chance. And that phone number is area code 828-891-5169. Again, that's 828 area code, then 891-5169, and that is available 24 hours a day to leave a message for us at Nature News. And then remember, you can also send us a letter, a postcard, the old-fashioned way, and address it to Nature News, 3150 North Mills River Road, Mills River, North Carolina, zip code 28759, and we'd love to hear from you that way as well. And also remember, if you don't want to get up early on a Saturday morning to listen to Nature News, because we're broadcasting 7 to 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, pretty doggone early, you no longer have to. Just because we have internet access these days means that you can do a lot of things like listen to Nature News on demand that you couldn't do a few years ago. So you can go to any hour of the day or night. If you go to WTZQ, the website for WTZQ Radio, they have a 1600 AM and a 95.3 FM signal. Just go to WTZQ.com, click on the tab. There it says On Air, and that brings up On Air programs. Click on the words Nature News. When you see that, that'll redirect you to our web presence on their webpage. You'll see the most recent 4 to 5 programs are archived on the website, and you can stream to whatever listening device you have. And there's a little description of program there as well. And if you dig a little deeper, you'll find that you can actually find even more back broadcasts of Nature News.
Okay, so meanwhile, I was looking up on the internet, and the tiger swallowtail is the state butterfly.
Okay, I was kind of thinking it was, but I didn't want to commit myself the air tour, in case I made a mistake.
Yeah, so, but you know, that's how people learn from their mistakes.
Well, yes, but I don't want to make mine public.
I'm planning.
Even though I can't say that I've always adhered to that,
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that I'm planning on learning from my mistakes if I ever make one.
Oh yeah, if you ever make one, Dan.
Yeah, maybe
I think you just did.
Yeah, I think I just did.
Just did by saying what you said, I think.
Okay, so let me think. Any other insect news that we had this past week?
Seen a good many carpenter bees are out and doing their thing.
The our first
been
report
out for about
of,
3 weeks now
of lightning bugs.
Oh,
first report.
Oh, you've got a light. Oh, I got another report for you about something else too. But tell me about the lightning bugs.
These are the kind of lightning bugs that are up in the canopy, up in the tree, high up in the tree, like 20, 30 feet up.
Yeah.
They're one of the early ones to come out, and we don't have the ones we normally think of are the ones flying close to the ground. Where That comes later in the year. But, and this usually does happen in April. We get some lightning bugs. They come out just after dusk, and they're not low down to the ground. They might be 20 feet, 30 feet up in the tree, just blinking up there. And at first, you might not even notice. Is that really something blinking up there? Is that like something in my eye making me think that? But, it's always nice to have the first lightning bugs, first fireflies of the year.
Everybody loves lightning bugs.
Yeah, so we got that report. Okay, what did you have?
I took a little trip down to the Piedmont a couple of days ago, Dan, and I went down to some old stomping grounds that I used to go to when I was a teenager in high school, and in my early 20s, I would go down to this place called Uwharrie National Forest, and it's a little bit of the mountains in the middle part of the state. It's northeast of Charlotte, about an hour and a half or so, and it's like you transplant yourself to the mountains here, but it's right in the middle part of the state. Of course, it's a lot smaller than the mountains that we have here, and some of the species mix of plants and things are a little bit different. The rock types will look a little bit different too, but it's a really cool place, and it's got a lot of wildlife and other stuff associated there. But I was there, and I was taking a little hike with a friend of mine. We were coming out of the woods, and this was kind of a cool day, but it was getting to the mid-60s. The sun had just been out because it had been overcast most of the day and kind of cool. And then I heard very weakly the sound of a periodical cicada.
Oh, wow.
And then a couple of seconds later, I heard the sound of another one nearby, but they were calling at the same time, so it was almost like an echo of the two, but it wasn't really, really loud, and I think it's because it's kind of cool, but it was definitely the call of two periodical cicadas. Of course, periodical cicadas are those creatures that here in the mountains last year, we had some in some locations, what they called the 17-year locusts, that come out. And they have different age broods, and they come out in one area by the hundreds or thousands or more, and just swarm everything around them. And they're so very well known by people, but there are coming out, once every 17 years.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's why I call them 70-year locusts. And whether there are other cicadas are on other life cycle, it's like 1 or 3 years, whatever.
Right.
And they all have a slightly different call, but this call was definitely, to me, it sounded like the call of the periodical cicada. So I was wondering if there was a brood that was due to come out there this year, or was something else going on there. And also, at first, I thought it was kind of early, but then, it's almost the first part of May, and this is down in the Piedmont where the seasons are go a little quicker. So it is about time for them to come out down there.
Right.
But it possibly been a periodical cicada?
Yeah, definitely. We had brood, I think, 14 last year, which, covered a wide area, including western North Carolina. But, there's always some cicadas that come out a year early or a year late. They're mostly synchronized. you know, 99 point something percent all come out at the correct year, the same year. But there's always a few that emerge early. There's a few that emerge later. And so that is another possibility that these are ones that, you know, just are emerging a year later than the rest of their brood. And sometimes when that happens, they can mix with other broods, you know, that are normally emerging in a different year. And there can be some crossing over, some genetic exchange going on between these different broods because of that. So I don't really know if there is a brood supposedly emerging more to the east this year than we had brood 14 last year. That's another thing we could look up on the internet.
That's right. That was kind of surprised me.
But yeah, but I mean, it wouldn't be unusual to have a few, a small number, very, very few emerging in an off year.
Yeah. And Dan, if that was kind of odd and strange, as soon as I left the woods and got in my truck, me and my friend, and rounded a corner, like 2 minutes later on this far service road,
right
there on the right side of the road, almost in the road track, but not quite, was a great big yellow-bellied slider turtle with a shell, you know, close to a foot from one end to the other. Well, it may be more like 10 inches. Uh-huh. And this is a water turtle, and she was digging a hole to lay eggs right there on the edge of this gravel road that was pretty dry and hard. But to the best of my knowledge, there was no permanent body of water probably within a three-quarters of a mile or more of where she was sitting. I couldn't understand. Water turtles often, I mean, they always leave the water to lay their eggs on land, but they'll dig it as close to a pond or lake or whatever as they can, their habitat there. But sometimes they have to go a couple hundred yards away. But then the little babies have to find their way back to water. That's difficult. But also, this was like the couple of days before the end of April, and normally you don't see yellow-bellied sliders, the water turtles, aquatic turtles, or even land turtles like the box turtle, lay their eggs until maybe June or July or something like that. So I can't believe this turtle's laying its eggs here.
That is unusual.
Last week of April, and it was no near water where I could see any that it would have come from. And it was just like, what an odd situation.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is odd.
Yeah.
So,
in any case.
But the weather's been unusually warm. We've had almost record temperatures.
And the Piedmont is a couple weeks ahead of us down there as well, weather-wise and season-wise. So, I still thought it was a little bit early.
Yeah.
Still thought it was a month early. But in any case, that's just an interesting observation that I made.
Well, things are advanced this year in terms of plants and animals, but the thing that really kick-started the spring was that rainfall that we had about a week ago. We had that good, steady rain, and about the next 2 or 3 days after that, everything greened up. All the young plants in the forest, the tree leaves came out in a greater extent. A lot of the herbaceous stuff turned green. The whole world turned green following that rain, and it was a dramatic change within a couple of days. Like, we advanced a lot. So that in the plant world, it's partly temperature, but also partly rainfall that determines the rate at which plants grow. And so now that we've had this rain, which also of course reduced the fire danger, and I think we mentioned last week on Nature News that the Blue Ridge Parkway is actually going to start clearing some of the fallen tree debris along the parkway right away. And that doesn't always happen with national parks. They've made a decision, decades ago that if there are naturally occurring events like fires, forest fires that were naturally started, which usually they're talking about out west, because most of our fires here are one way or another related to human activity. But there was a big fire in Yellowstone at one time, and they decided just let it burn. We're not going to extinguish it. It's a natural fire. And so for a while, the thought was that maybe because this was a natural event, Hurricane Helene, they would just let the trees where they fell and let them go back to nature, decompose, serve as nurse logs, provide habitat for animals, denning sites, and so forth. But because this debris is also a great fire danger to humans who live near the parkway, buildings, structures, that they are going to clear up certain stretches of the parkway. And so they're going to clear up from up near Craggy Gardens, all the way past the Folk Arts Center, to the southern part near 25 south of Asheville, and a few other areas where there was a lot of damage. So they're going to start clearing that up, reducing some of the fire danger. But of course, the rain also really helped in terms of that. So that was good news. Yeah. Okay, let's see. What else do we have, nature news-wise?
Well, Dan, how about a roadkill report?
Okay, well, that's the unique feature of nature news, where we gather important information by observing the lifeless remains of those creatures which failed to make it across the road. And we, as far as we know, you know, there are other nature news programs in the world. That's why we, our website is naturenewswnc, but our email is. But I don't know if any other nature news program anywhere that has a roadkill report.
If they do, they probably copied us.
That's right, because we've been doing it for how many years? 30-something.
33 years.
But, I mean, it's, you know, even in scientific journals, this is a random method of sampling animal populations. You can determine numbers of creatures by the random chance that they're hit crossing a road. You can determine range expansions. That's how we found out that armadillos were now present in our broadcast region. And so scientific publications use roadkills as an index of what's going on with animals. And we do the same thing. So what's going on with roadkill report?
Well, it is a breeding season for certain animals. And I'm talking about possums in the pouch.
Okay.
So possums are in the pouch now, which means our native marsupial, the only one in North America, the North American opossum, sometimes called the Virginia opossum, or normally just called by good old boys like me, the possum.
Right.
A lot of them are carrying babies right now. And a lot of some already local wildlife rehabilitators are getting calls about little baby possums. At this point in time, a lot of their eyes are not open, but they're probably at this point in time probably a month old for a lot of them, and they are carried every night in the mother's pouch, unlike a raccoon or fox or somebody like that that nurses their babies and leaves them back in a den somewhere and comes back and nurses again. Baby possums develop in a pouch because that's where the feeding ports are, the little nipples they feed off in there, and they attach themselves and they don't let go from the day they were born and crawled in the pouch until the day they're ready to start eating solid food. So they stay in there attached for up to almost 3 months or more before they ever let go and come out on their own and start wandering around on the back of the female.
If you look at a baby possum at this stage, it looks almost like an embryo. So it's as if they were completing their embryonic development outside of the womb. They're in the pouch, which is kind of like an external womb, and they just continue to grow in there. Mm. And so So it's very unfortunate if a possum is hit at this stage,
yes.
Because the possum itself is not just a single, if it's a female, single female opossum, but it's usually, it could be 14 possums that are killed at one time.
Yeah. So be extremely careful, slow down, and it's very easy to hit a possum, and you don't want to do that because it very well could be a mother possum. So keep that in mind, and remember there's other possums out there too, the daddy possums who don't stay with the mama possum, but out there making more baby possums. And there's other animals out there too, because this is a breeding season, a lot of things are moving around, and the animal you hit and kill could be a nursing female, and that could be a slow death for all of the babies that are left behind.
Right.
Because a lot of times with certain mammal species, the male doesn't help with the raising of the young at all, but when it comes to birds, usually the males do help with the raising of the young.
I haven't heard of roadkill bear reports, but I've experienced, you know, a lot of sightings of bears, especially mother bears with cubs, with the young cubs that were born this past winter along the side of roads. I've had, three times in the past week be driving on a road, someone flashing their lights, you know, to warn me of something ahead. And I just, at this point, assume, oh, it's probably a bear. And sometimes it's just, there's a bear near the road and people are slowing down or stopping to look at the bear. But this week it's been usually a mom with two or three cubs, the young cubs, and they could be near the side of the road. Sometimes the cubs are even up in a tree, or they could be, you know, crossing the road. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, be aware of that bears are moving around, and sometimes it's a mom with her cubs either following her or preceding her. And be careful, because there are a lot of black bears around.
I haven't seen any black bears this spring yet.
Whoa,
I'm waiting my first sighting of the spring.
We had, you know, last week we reported on Nature News the bear that was sighted inside my house.
Mm-hmm.
We had that story. This week I've got a story of black bears inside my car.
Inside your car?
Inside
my gosh.
Car. And
I don't know which is worse.
Yeah, I don't know. You know,
did they try to drop your car off? Did you leave the keys in there, did you, Dan?
No, I didn't leave the keys in, fortunately. And, of course, you know, normally I always lock my car because of bears. And I never leave food in my car because of bears. But I broke both of those rules this past week. I came home and I was just going to run in the house and get a box. We're cleaning out. We moved back into our house. We're cleaning out the old stuff. And I'm not going to lock it, so I'm just going in the house to get this box and bring it back. And I also had some bagels that I had just purchased in the car. And I thought, I'm going to be right back. And I did come back in just like a minute, but then I went back to get a second box. Left the car unlocked with the bagels in it. Almost an invitation for a black bear. but I got the second box, and it was old papers that we're going to get rid of. And I started looking through the papers. Oh, I didn't want to throw them all out. I started separating the papers. So I was probably in the house for 20 minutes. And when I came back out, there was a bear in the passenger seat, two bears just outside the passenger door, and they accepted the invitation and entered my car. So I was, surprised, and I unconsciously just blurted out at them to just the word, hey. And, of course, that startled them. They got ready to leave. I had my bear spray, if you remember from last week's episode. Mm-hmm. I had the bear spray, which I was going to, if the bears came back. I had it right there near the front door, grabbed that, and I sprayed them. And at this point, they were only about, 15 to 20 feet away. And, of course, they ran off. And so they may have gotten a whiff of this bear spray. But they, of course, had eaten the bagels that were in the car. And I looked in the car. There didn't seem to be any damage. And so they were very polite once again. But later on...
They wouldn't be invited back.
That's right. Later on, when I tried to drive the car, there were claw marks on the steering wheel. I think the one that was inside, due to my manly voice yelling, hey, at them, it scrambled out. And I think it accidentally ripped up the steering wheel a little bit. So anyway, this just serves to reinforce the lesson. So for now, if I'm going in the house for like 30 seconds, I'm going to lock the car. And as soon as I get back from the grocery store, I'm first thing taking the groceries in. So we've had a lot of reports of car break-ins by bears. Black bears know how to open car doors if they're not locked. They've got these 2-inch long claws. They can slip them under the handle of a car and pull it upwards. If it's not locked, the door will open. They can then open the door further using their claws to, pull it out. They can enter the car. And typically, they usually will do this if they smell food in the car. But sometimes they can smell the leftover scent from a meal. If you eat a meal in the car, say you go to a drive-through, you get some kind of food, even if the wrapper is still in the car, or just the fragrance of what you have formerly eaten in the car, they will do that. But I think they also have been starting to just open a car to see what's in there. I mean, they get fed by going into cars. Let's open a car and see what's in it. We had a report from, I think, either Gatlinburg or Sevierville. What's that town north of Gatlinburg? Sevierville?
It is Sevierville.
Yeah, Sevierville. Anyway, of someone, it was a camera looking at the parking lot for a motel, and a bear coming through the parking lot and going car to car, trying each car to see if any of them were left open. Huh. And so sometimes you can see muddy paw prints by your door handles as a bear was trying it, seeing if we could get in. And so now that the bears were rewarded by breaking into my car, I have to be even more diligent. They've been in my house, they've been in my car, and so I'm really up with trying to prevent them in the future. I don't want them to get rewarded anymore. And as I mentioned last week on Nature News, in my opinion, you have to give them an unhappy episode that they will remember. And I think maybe the best way to do that would be using bear spray, which is very potent. It's kind of like mace. It causes disruption, of the eyes, of the breathing. And I think it would be an unpleasant enough experience that the bears would remember that. So you haven't seen any bears?
Not yet. But as soon as I start, I'll probably go home and there'll be one on my porch.
Well, yeah.
And, I've had a couple of visits to the bird feeder, but I just haven't laid eyes on any bears yet. but plenty of raccoons and skunks and other things.
But, you know, the bears are hungry this time of year. They don't have a lot of berries yet. They don't have a lot of acorns or any kind of nuts yet.
Yeah.
And so this is a time when they will be prowling around looking for food. And so, of course, trash containers are one of their big sources of food, and bird feeders are a big source of food. And if North NC Wildlife hears about a problem bear, they will come to a neighborhood and they will cite people. I don't know if it's a fine or not, or just warn people that they can't have bird feeders out anymore. So if you have a lot of break-ins in your neighborhood and your neighbors are feeding the birds, they will be told to remove their bird feeders, because that's one of the attractants for bears. And they will also investigate any object that looks like it might be a bird feeder.
Yeah, this past couple of years I've had reports of people, and I speculate the same thing, they'll find like bluebird boxes.
Right.
They're on a pole, and they're pulled down just like you put a bird feeder on a pole, and a bear comes and pulls it down and bends the pole down so he can get to the bird feeder.
Right.
More and more we're seeing nest boxes, things like that, pulled down, and some people think that, well, the bears are attacking our boxes and trying to eat our bluebirds or our bluebird eggs or babies, whatever. And I, even though they could do that, but I think it's really more that it just resembles something like a bird feeder that they pull down to get food, and I think they're pulling it down because of that.
Right.
And I don't think it's actually an actual attack on the things that are in there.
Right. I remember when people used to have these little satellite dishes, you know, for DirecTV, those kind of things, which look a little bit like one of these tray feeders for birds, and we've had several of those pulled down by bears, and people are wondering why. Probably because it looks similar to a bird feeder, and they're just going to check it out and see what's in there. So not only bird feeders, also bird baths. They frequently will drink out of a bird bath.
And,
you know, they need a source of water also.
Especially during this drought we just recently.
Yeah, right. So bird baths, bird feeders, all those could be attractants. And apparently some of these nesting boxes for birds, or maybe even some of the nesting boxes for, like, flying squirrels.
Yeah.
So, they will investigate, and if they find any food, they will continue returning, looking for... How many times would a bear come? You know, it found some food one time in a car. How many times do you think it would come back looking at that same car?
I think it'd come back at least once or twice more to see if it could be rewarded again, and if after that it might not come back anymore if you broke the cycle, you know, a little bit.
So they will return, but if they're not rewarded, they'll gradually stop. But I think it's even more effective if you give them a negative experience.
And a negative experience would be what, Dan?
Bear spray.
Bear spray. But what if you're not there to do the bear spray?
Well, then you don't do it. But I mean, like if you find them there, I think that would be effective. But if you regularly lock your car so that they can never get into it, I think eventually they might slow down.
Never store anything like that around your house, like food in your car, if you can get away with it, if you're around where you think bears are. But if you're out camping, like at a public campground, that's where you're going to have to put food, because you don't want to put it in a tent with you, but you put it back in your car, but you try to put it in some kind of container that has very little scent. Like a lot of coolers will hold the smell in there, you know, if they're shut tight or something. Right. And they do make certain things that don't let odors out very, very well, but that's the big thing. If there's an odor there, they might investigate it.
Yeah. Okay, well, speaking of bears, earlier today, I was driving here to the Arboretum to record Nature News, and I saw three really young cubs, the cubs that were born this past winter.
You see bears almost every day.
Yeah.
And I get so
really
jealous.
Don't see, you need more bears?
I need more bears in my visual.
But not in your house or car.
Yeah.
But, it's fun to see them. Anyway, these three bears, all young, all born this past winter, up in a tree. And the bears that visited my house, I'm interpreting them as being a mom and two cubs, because one bear is slightly bigger than the other. But these would be the cubs born a year ago, so they'd be like a year and 3 months old. But I was wondering if, last year we had a bear with three cubs, and my thought was, well, one of them was a male, and it has left and struck out on its own already, the two females staying with the mom. But would a male cub grow at a faster rate than a female cub?
Yeah, usually they're a little bit bigger.
So could these be...
Because they're also going to be bigger as an adult.
Right.
Just generally speaking.
So could these three bears that I saw, one slightly bigger than the other two, instead of being a mother and two female cubs, could it be a male, like two sisters and a brother hanging out together?
Possibility.
And so the male being a little bit bigger.
Yeah, it's a possibility. So, but I don't know, even though as a... Usually, even as a yearling bear, most males want to be left alone.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a little hard to say.
That was my thought. Is the male probably? But I, okay. So it wouldn't be with its mother, but probably wouldn't also be with its sisters then.
Probably not, but it's always a possibility.
Yeah, okay. You never know. I'm kind of thinking it's a female with the two daughters that are doing that. So anyway, yeah, bears in the area, and be bear wise. Don't feed the bears. Don't leave food out for some people, you know, might leave food out for other animals, even a pet. Leave food out on the porch. That would attract bears. Even water like bird baths could attract bears. Lock your doors on your car. Don't store food in your car. And apparently they don't break windows. I've never heard of a case of a bear breaking in by breaking a glass window. Have you ever heard of a bear doing that?
No, I mean, it doesn't mean they can't do it.
Yeah, but I haven't heard
of it. I might break a glass window if I'm hungry enough.
But they will, if there's a screen, definitely break through the screen to get in. Mm-hmm. So even on a warm night, you might be tempted to leave your patio screen door open.
You know, smells go through a screen much better than glass anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That might have something to do with it.
So we are definitely have a good, healthy bear population. Seems like... It almost seems like there are a denser population of bears in the city limits of Asheville or Hendersonville than in the country. Mm-hmm. I think they get better fed by being around people who, have trash, garbage with food scraps they throw out, tip over garbage can, probably a higher density of food, more calories than they could get from scrounging out in the woods even this time of year, scratching into rotting logs to get grubs or whatever they would be doing, digging up yellow jacket nests and getting stung just to get the honey from those nests. And so I think they did a urban bear study a few years ago, and they found that the urban bears were in general bigger than the country bears. The females were having more cubs than the country bears, and I think the females were reproducing at a younger age. So all in all, the bears are doing better within contact with people than they are out in the countryside.
But is that really better when it really comes to it? Because they're being enhanced beyond what their natural limitations normally are.
Well, they're bigger. Yeah, but they're bigger and healthier. That's what
you're kind of learning. But are they really that healthy? Eating junk food.
Well, I don't know.
Well, I guess if they're eating bird seed is healthy.
Yeah.
But if they're eating stuff out of dumpster, they might be bigger. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily healthier. But
yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Larger. Let's say just larger and breeding more offspring.
Right. Well, Dan, we got to talk about some wildflowers.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
It's that season of the year here, and now that the trees are leafing out overhead, and getting our attention. You know, a lot of those spring wildflowers are disappearing down at our feet. They can't take the shade, but we're starting to see more of those edge wildflowers in bloom out there. But depending on what elevation you're at, also, there's still a lot of flowers blooming at the higher elevation where the leaves aren't out completely yet. Remember, spring is very much here in the lower elevation, but higher elevation spring is just getting there.
True.
You know, and
we'll
see all kinds of different wildflowers depending on where you're at. And we have some trees and woody vegetation here is in bloom, but then we have the herbaceous wildflowers as well.
Yeah, if you go up above 4,000 feet, you can still find a lot of the trilliums in bloom, wild ginger in bloom, Solomon seal, all these spring plants that were in bloom maybe 3 weeks ago down in the lower elevations are still blooming when you get up to the higher elevations. We've got large flowered white trilliums in bloom up there. We've got the red wake robin trillium. We've got some of the nodding trilliums. All those trilliums, the painted trillium, all up in the other upper elevations. And then even some things like hepatica, blood... Well, I haven't heard of bloodroot, but I wouldn't be surprised. But, the wild gingers, Solomon seal, the Clinton's lily, all these things in bloom at the upper elevations, which have kind of passed at the lower elevations. So you know, you got an extended view of spring if you head up the mountainsides.
Yeah. And we also have some pretty cool temperatures lately that are a little more reminiscent of a cool spring, you know, rather than a... I mean, we've had some pretty high temperatures, too, but we've had a lot of cool nights and cooler days come and go. We've had a little mix of all this, but it's been overall a pretty nice spring, except for being somewhat dry, but we've had some of that relieved by some rains as well.
Yeah.
You know, you're speaking of wildflowers, Dan, I want to mention some wildflowers that are on the trees right now.
Okay.
And, you know, when flowers bloom on a tree, if it blooms before the leaves come out, it's very obvious.
Uh-huh.
You know, but sometimes they bloom when the leaves are there and it's not obvious at all. And a good example of that right now is the tulip trees are in bloom around our area, what a lot of people used to refer to as the tulip poplar or the yellow poplar, but it's really the tulip tree.
Right.
And a member of the magnolia family, which is one of our more common trees here throughout the mountains. And now that their leaves are expanding, getting up pretty close to full size, that is when they also bloom, right around May 1st. And last week, April, and going to May 1st, I think. In fact, some of them, I think, are a little bit earlier this year. But their blooms are as big as the leaves, but the leaves hide the blooms
from
the ground because they're above the leaves.
The blooms are spectacular. They're called tulip tree because of the blooms, which have some green in them, some orange, some yellow. But, you know, they're as big as a tulip.
Right.
And if you just don't notice them because the leaves are there, but if you can be up above, like on a ridge looking down, is a spectacular ornamental. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, you know, to really appreciate that, you have to, you know, have like a mansion on the hill or something where you're looking down slope and have a tulip tree below your house.
Or just buy your drone and send it up and take pictures.
Yeah, or do that. But they are a spectacular flowering tree, but you have to see them from up above.
Yeah, so a lot of times we have some of these wind events that come through, like thunderstorms and stuff in the spring, that tear off some leaves and stuff off the trees. It'll tear off some of the blooms. You'll just suddenly start finding some of those spent blooms on the ground. Say, oh, the tulip trees are in bloom. I couldn't even see the blooms because the trees' leaves are hiding them. But that's when they bloom this time of year, which means that a lot of the the beekeepers in our area are moving hives into areas where there's a lot of tulip trees.
Right.
And taking advantage of what we call the nectar flow with them. They'll do the same thing when we have sourwood bloom back in July. So the tulip trees are blooming right now, but the black cherry is in bloom now. And normally the black cherry starts to bloom with this big clusters of white flowers that are kind of pendant hanging about time when the leaves are coming out good. But as the leaves continue to grow, then some kind of mask the black cherry blooms, but usually you'll see the black cherry blooms pretty quickly. But they're, you know, black cherries, if you have a good tree that's flowering really good, they just have masses of white flowers.
Oh, yeah.
It's just really, really, really pretty out there. Also, a pendant bloom that hangs down in a cluster, kind of like a grape cluster, the flowers of the black locust tree is blooming right now.
And that is a spectacular ornamental. That tree is extremely popular in Europe as an ornamental. When it's in bloom, these sweet pea-looking flowers dangling down from the branches. It was one of the first ornamental trees imported to Europe from North America back in the day when the botanical explorers were going out. And I remember being in there's a little park in Paris, France, and it's close to Notre Dame Cathedral, but it's an entire park dedicated to a single black locust tree. And so this is an ancient black locust tree, several hundred years old, planted among one of the first black locust seeds brought over to Europe. And it's massive, and it's propped up. The spreading branches are held up by these wooden supports to maintain it. And it's a prized ornamental tree, a black locust that people around here consider to be a weed tree.
Mm-hmm.
People try to eliminate the black locust.
And over there, into fences. Fence posts.
Yeah, that's right. But over there, it's a prized ornamental. So, yeah, black locust, I love the flowers on that tree.
And it also produces a very mild honey for people that... beekeepers that are able to take advantage of the blooms of that. So the black locust bloom right now along with the tulip trees makes the honeybees happy and makes the beekeepers happy. Black cherry trees we mentioned before. Also, Dan, you mentioned you've seen some mock orange.
Yes.
Indigo bush. Those are shrubs we have in our area. The mock orange is kind of citrusy.
Yeah.
Citrus, I can't say that word.
Citrusy?
Yeah, citrusy. But indigo bush has some really deep purple flowers.
Yeah, I like both of those plants. The mock orange is kind of a... Yeah, weak-stemmed, I guess you call it.
Yeah, it's kind
not
of sprawls.
A sprawling kind of plant, but with those beautiful white blooms.
Yeah. And also the dog hobbles,
yeah,
which is a, what some people call leucothoe, and it's got white flowers on it, and then they bend down. They're one of my favorite shrubs out there. I like them. And the sweet shrub, which we also talked about last week, is in bloom still around our area. So not everything is blooming. It's herbaceous. We do have some trees in bloom, some shrubs, and other woody vegetation.
Yeah, we
had a... blackberries. Blackberries,
yeah, blackberries are in bloom. A wildflower question come in from one of our listeners about trilliums. She has a patch of large flowered white trilliums in her garden or maybe just in her woods near her house. And she said she's admired these every year, but this year they didn't bloom. They just came up, but they never bloomed. And the question was, why didn't they bloom?
Lost their energies or something, didn't they?
Yeah, and I would think that probably last year, some animal, like maybe a deer, came by and ate off the tops of those trilliums, and they didn't produce enough sugar to be stored down in the rhizome as starch to produce a flower. If they don't have enough energy stored in their roots, they will still send up some leaves, but they won't produce a flower and seeds because those are large energy requirements. Or it could have been even that somebody stepped on these flowers on the stems and the leaves last year. Someone picked the flower. Something happened most likely to them last year, building up more energy to where they're strong enough to bloom again. Yeah. So sometimes that happens to a trillium. Deer love trillium.
Oh, I've had so many trilliums that I planted and matured and just waiting for them to pop out, and then you go out there and they're all mowed down by the deer who just love to eat trillium leaves and the trillium blossoms as well. And so that reminds me, I guess you go into Smokies, maybe there's just too many trilliums for them to all feed on there, or maybe that deep forest habitat is just not conducive to deer, but you wonder in some of these places where they have so many trilliums growing, the deer population must be less there, otherwise they would definitely eat up all the trilliums.
Yeah, I remember... deer browse on trilliums. The next year they come up shorter and probably don't flower. Mm-hmm. And I remember an article came out in one of the wildlife journals. This is back in the 1990s. And somebody noticed this, that if there are a lot of deer, the trilliums are shorter. And so he figured out a way that instead of, trapping and deer and marking them and releasing them and recapturing them to get the population level, you just go out and you measure the height of the trilliums in the habitat. And he had a little table set up. If your trilliums are this tall, this is your deer population. If they're this tall, this is your deer population. So it's such a strong relationship that the height of trilliums can be used to predict the population of deer.
Wow.
So most likely for this answer to this question, somebody or something either browsed these trilliums or someone, like you said.
Right, so it did something to do with the energy flow there got interrupted.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, speaking of energy flow, we're going to have to interrupt our program here to end it.
Oh, no.
Because we're just about out of time here.
Okay,
let's just quickly recap. If you want to get in touch with us here at Nature News, best way is email. That's naturenewswnc@gmail.com. Once again, that's naturenewswnc@gmail.com. Or pick up the phone and leave us a voicemail message at air code 828. And then phone number 891-5169. That's area code 828. And then phone number 891-5169. We're going to address a letter or postcard to Nature News, 3150 North Mills River Road, Mills River, North Carolina, zip code 28759. And listen to Nature News on Demand by going to WTZQ.com. Click on the program tab and then click on Where's Nature News to be redirected to where you archive some back broadcast of Nature News.
Okay, thank you for listening to our program. Until next week, this is Dan Lazar.
And I'm Carlton Burke.
And we're broadcasting from the front seat of Carlton's pickup truck at the North Carolina Arboretum. Meanwhile, get and enjoy the peak of spring this week in beautiful western North Carolina. And stay tuned to the same station. We'll be back again next Saturday morning with another edition of
Nature News.